This is Reese Tisdall, CEO of Bluefield Research.
This is John Ensminger, General Manager of the Southern Nevada Water Authority and Las Vegas Valley Water District.
This is Cindy Wallace-Lage.
This is Pat Sinacropi, Executive Director of the Water Reuse Association.
This is James Eklund.
Hi, this is Jeff Keilinger, the former General Manager of the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California.
I'm Allison Watts.
I'm Tony Parrott.
Hi, this is Adele Hash-Khalil. I'm the General Manager of Metropolitan Water District of Southern California.
This is Sivan Zamir, Head of Early Stage Innovation and Venture at Xylem.
This is Jim Lockhead, the now retired CEO of Denver Water.
This is Will Pickering, the CEO of Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority.
This is Joe Mowat, the General Manager at Eastern Municipal Water District.
Hi, this is Austin Alexander, Vice President of Sustainability and Social Impact at Xylem.
And this is Sarah McGimsey, and you've been listening to the Water Values Podcast for 10 years now. Happy 10th birthday to the Water Values Podcast.
The Water Values Podcast is sponsored by the following market-leading companies and organizations. By 120 Water, new rules need new tools. By 1898 & Co., possibilities powered by experience. By Woodard & Curran, high-quality consulting engineering, science, and operations services. By Intera, innovation and stewardship for a sustainable tomorrow. By Xylem, let's solve water. By the American Water Works Association, dedicated to the world's most important resource, and by Black & Veatch, building a world of difference. This is Session 254.
Welcome to the Water Values Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to water utilities, resources, treatment, reuse, and all things water. Now here's your host, Dave McGimsey.
Hello and welcome to another session of the Water Values Podcast. As my daughter Sarah said, my name is Dave McGimsey, and thank you for joining me, and thank you for your support over the last 10 years. It's been terrific. It's been a terrific ride, and I thank you all. So we have a terrific and important show for you today. We're running it back with Matthew Klein, who just happened to be our very first guest on the Water Values Podcast way back in 2014. Matt has wound his way through the world of water, and he even got a doctoral degree in strategic foresight along the way, which he applies to the water sector. You're going to learn a ton listening to Matt on today's pod, so get ready. Well, as you know, we always say thank you to our awesome sponsors at the top of every show, and we have some fantastic sponsors this year. Our 2024 sponsorship lineup includes 120 Water, 1898 & Co., Woodard & Curran, Intera, Xylem, the American Water Works Association, and Black & Veatch. And what a terrific collection of impactful companies that have affirmatively decided to support water industry thought leadership and education. Thank you all. And I'd like for you, the listener, to please do me a favor. If you work for or with any of the sponsors, please thank your boss or thank your contact at the sponsor firm and tell them that you appreciate their leadership in the industry through the sponsorship. You'd be surprised how far that simple little note of thanks will go. And as long as you're letting the sponsors know that you appreciate their support of water industry education and thought leadership, hey, why not leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast directory you're accessing the podcast on? It'd be greatly appreciated and, of course, helps others find out about the podcast. And also, please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Yes. Well, it's time for the main event, our interview with Dr. Matthew Klein. So let's get that water flowing. Well, Matt, welcome back to the Water Values Podcast. It's been a while. How are you?
I'm doing well. It is a privilege and an honor to be here with you, Dave.
Yes. It's always good speaking with you, Matt. And this is kind of a special occasion because 10 years ago, you were the very first guest on the Water Values Podcast in that kind of experiment that I wasn't really sure how I was getting into it. And here we are 10 years later, and you're back.
I am back. I am still around, and kudos to you for your foresight in putting together the Water Values Podcast. I think it has been a tremendous feature in the world of water for people to come together and talk to you about all sorts of different things that are going on in the world of water. You've really made a difference throughout the water sector. So congratulations to you and the podcast. It's been, I'm sure for you, a wonderful ride. And here's to another 10, 20, 30, or 40 years yeah. the Water Values yeah. podcast.
Well, yeah, let's hope I'm around that long. Well, thank you very much for your kind words, Matt. It means a lot coming from you. And, you know, it has been a treat. There have been times where I've been up at like, you know, 1 a.m. because something broke or I can't get it right or something. And I kind of wonder, why am I doing this? And then I will get a nice email or something else will happen. And it just makes it all, better. And it's weird how those periods of frustration are followed immediately. I mean, it's almost karmic how it turns around so quickly. I will get an email like the next day or within hours of that, that kind of slog.
You get that encouragement that keeps you going.
Yeah, exactly. Cause it's just like life, right? There's ups and downs and you just try to keep on going.
You'll do an episode and think, boy, this is going to get maybe one download and you just hit it out of the park. It's sometimes that happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Matt, back when we first talked, when you were crazy enough to come on and be the very first guest on the Water Values podcast, at that time you were the chief technical guy at the Office of Utility Consumer Counselor in Indiana, and you had followed that up with a career as an environmental lawyer, environmental regulator, and the executive director of the Indianapolis Department of Water Works. Where has your journey in water taken you since that period 10 years ago?
Boy, I think after those opportunities, I became the president of a private equity backed water and wastewater utility, kind of leading two different states, and did that for a while. Went to work for another water utility for a bit, and now I am the CEO and chief futurist of Aqualaris Group. I worked on my doctorate, completed that, and had a real dedicated focus to the discipline of strategic foresight. And as I'm sure you'll be happy to know, I've tried to link the discipline of strategic foresight to the world of water. So what do we do with that? So that's kind of where I've landed. And it's been very interesting to, like you, talk to people and engage them on what does the future hold for the world of water.
I think it's great. So you've intimated, and you have your own podcast, the Water Foresight Podcast, great podcast. And I think it is important what you're doing, because just like any industry, too often the water industry has some folks that are, again, just trying to get through the day, not really putting that strategic foresight on, and we're really losing out. And I'm not saying the entire industry is like this. I'm just saying that problem persists in the water industry. And so I'm curious to understand why, first off, why did you start the Water Foresight Podcast? And then kind of talk to me a little about the intersection between the discipline of strategic foresight and water.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I decided to focus on foresight for my doctoral work because, to a fault, I am an individual who kind of lives in the future. I'm always thinking very far ahead. I'm very much a strategic-oriented person versus tactical. I'm not going to be the guy running the widget factory. That would bore me to death. I'm out there thinking about opportunities, challenges in the future, and then how do we begin to think about addressing those opportunities and challenges today in the here and now. And so foresight, we'll get into what that means, but being a water guy, I thought, why don't I link those two together? Because, as I'll explain in a few minutes, I think the water sector can use a healthy dose of foresight to help it be successful in the future. So I decided to put together a podcast to help me bring thought leaders, even like you, to bear on the issues that confront or may confront the world of water in the future, to really bring those issues to bear for the leaders, legislators, regulators, not-for-profit leaders, bring those issues to bear today so we can thoughtfully consider those opportunities and risks and begin to think about how to address them. I think that the discipline of foresight is pretty straightforward. I talk about it in three simple ways. It is anticipating, framing, and shaping the future. And the future could be possible outcomes, plausible, probable futures. And we don't just talk about the future as a singular. We talk about it as plural. So you'll hear, you know, foresight professionals and futurists, they talk about futures, plural. And we look at those, we examine those futures through the signals of change that we monitor and see in the world. And we'll get into some of those signals of change for the audience. But that's really what foresight is at a very basic level. It's looking at multiple futures. It's in trying to anticipate, frame, and shape those possible, plausible, and probable futures.
So as you were saying that, I couldn't help but think, we just had our partners meeting here recently, and one of the quotes they put up on the board, because we obviously have gone through strategic analyses and attempted foresight, and one of the quotes they put up on the board was an Abraham Lincoln quote, you know, the best way to predict the future is to create it. And yeah, that it sounds a lot like that's kind of an aspect of this, the discipline of foresight.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, if you're not looking at the signals of change, if you're not engaging in foresight activities, you're just letting things happen, and that's not a good way to lead your organization. You know, philosophically, I think that, and I truly believe that foresight is the tip of the spear when it comes to organizations. Foresight helps you drive strategy, which helps you drive ultimately your organizational design and then your hiring decisions. So I think it was, Yogi Berra, I think, said, you know, when you reach a fork in the road, take it. And, you know, you have other quotes too. You know, if you don't know where you're going, then any path will take you there, right? Lewis Carroll, I believe, said that. So leaders typically are visionary, they're strategic, but foresight helps them to really get out there into the future. By future, I'm not really talking about the typical strategic planning that we may see, you know, kind of a 3 to 5 year plan. We're talking 10, 20, even 50 years out. And I will say most of what you and I probably see out there in the world of water would be a 50-year water supply plan, or even some of the more current climate resiliency related studies where they're thinking way out into the future. But beyond that, we don't see foresight activities and the related tools being engaged across other elements of the organization. So when it comes to foresight, there are various tools we can use. We can use very simple tools like a futures wheel, all the way up to what is probably the most significant foresight tool or activity called scenario planning. And that's very involved. That's kind of what you might see from some larger organizations that have committed to foresight, like McDonald's or Lego and other companies, where they actually have foresight leadership in the company doing this all the time. And they are performing scenario planning activities on a regular basis. So with respect to water, I think you kind of touched on it earlier, but I don't know that the culture of water is built to really receive this discipline of foresight. And that's my bias. That's my hypothesis. And I think the reason for that is it's an industry that is very technically based. It is full of engineers, accountants, analyst personalities. The cultures that are typically found with water systems, I'll just kind of focus on water utilities, water systems. As you and I know, what, 80, 85% of the water utilities in America are governmental entities. And so they are what we call hierarchical cultures from an organizational cultural perspective. And they're very low on creativity. This is not Apple. This is not Microsoft, Google, things like that, where there's a high level of creativity. We call those, you know, adhocracy cultures. And so the world of water is focused on predictability and consistency. We don't want to do anything funny in the world of water that could create a problem for the water supply or the water quality. And so how's that commercial? You know, set it and forget it, right? The future really is not that significant because water's always been here and it will always be here is kind of the thought. And we get the system set up. We provide water that's clean. We receive the wastewater, we treat it, and that is the system, and everything is fine. So the future that we think of in Foresight is not often something that is very well received or considered in the typical world of water. Does that make sense?
That makes absolute sense, and I tend to agree with you. And I'm curious in all the roles you filled in the water sector. Have you seen any utilities that are engaging in Foresight? And that's really, I'm curious if you've even seen it present in the field of water.
Well, I'll say yes. And the one that comes to mind is, I'll protect the innocent or the guilty, as you say, but it's in Australia. They actually have a Foresight professional at their utility, but the short answer is no. I don't think that the typical American utility is really engaging in Foresight in a meaningful way. There are multiple strategic plans, whether it's the water supply plan, whether it's a climate-related plan. These plans tend to be done very well, but they're in silos. They're often forecasts rather than really scenario-based plans. We're going to plan assuming that sea level will rise or the temperature will go to X. These plans don't consider, well, what if it doesn't, right? What if we enter an ice age, right, or a global cooling, right? That would never happen, right? So I do think that water utilities are thinking in part about the future, but it's a very sporadic and disjointed effort. And I think that the world of water could really seriously benefit from thinking holistically about the various futures of water that we'll get into here in a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm curious again, what do you see as the main benefits of a utility adopting a Foresight mentality?
Really, it comes down to two buckets. It's taking advantage of opportunities and avoiding material risks. If you put your creativity hat on and you engage the different tools of Foresight and you can think out into the future about possible, probable, plausible futures, and you're monitoring the signals of change, you're meeting regularly with your teams. And by the way, when I say teams, I'm not just talking about the senior leadership team. I'm talking about bringing people from outside your organization, a few customers, a couple vendors, people who work in customer service who have a particular level of exposure to things that the senior leadership team may not see. They help you and will help you think about these signals of change. But putting all that together and looking at various scenarios about the future, and then being able to articulate those different futures and backcasting into strategies that you can work on today. How do you prepare for this opportunity? How do you prepare to avoid that risk? And in part, let's be honest, I think the climate studies that we see consultants undertaking on behalf of their utility clients, that could be an example of, let's plan for the future. Let's plan for this particular scenario. If I am in Miami-Dade and I think sea level will rise, I got to know, what's that going to do? Is it going to flood all my lift stations, my pump stations, my water, wastewater plants? Where do I build my next facility if the sea level is going to rise 2 or 3 feet, right? So that may be a good example of a particular kind of planning. But I think that is what I would encourage utilities in particular, and not just utilities, but not-for-profits and other organizations in the world of water, to undertake those foresight activities to prepare for opportunities and to avoid risks. And that's a bit of a challenge, Dave. As you know, as I mentioned, many of the utilities are governmental entities. They're not in the for-profit world where they're looking to build a new widget and gain a market advantage. But for those investor-owned utilities, foresight could provide a very meaningful opportunity to differentiate themselves in the marketplace.
Absolutely. Do you have any thoughts on how to pivot from the current construct to one that engages in foresight activities?
Yeah, I would say very simply, it takes leadership. You have to have, let's say you have a board of waterworks, right? The mayor, the council, the board of waterworks, I think should have a written commitment to that, a resolution. I think if that doesn't happen, then perhaps the general manager, the CEO of the water utility, can begin to drive a culture of foresight by developing a team, looking formally at signals of change, and being able to identify risks and opportunities. I think it just takes the leaders of these water-focused organizations to make it happen. And let's be honest, let's pivot over to the growing world in water tech. There's all kinds of smart people, you've interviewed a ton of them, that are building new widgets, software, hardware. That is ripe for that particular sector. Those folks are creative. They see opportunities. They see challenges, and they could really benefit from a culture of foresight. They build things. They are looking to the future and how they can compete in the marketplace of ideas. How can they build the next better widget and compete with other folks in the marketplace? So it's not just the utilities. It's also the folks that supply goods and services to the world of water. So,
yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned technological. Let's talk about some of the disciplines within the water sector that can benefit from foresight. Technologies is one. What about like social, legal, ethical, yeah, some of those other categories? Yeah, yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on those.
Yeah, we call them lenses. It helps us think through the different drivers of change. And real quick on the technological, one of the things that we might see is technology is awesome. Nothing like putting in smart meters, right? I don't have to have Jimmy or Sally run around and read meters, take hours to read the meters, get down, lift the lid. I can drive around in a truck or sit at my computer and hit a button and read the meters. I can do it every hour. I can do it on a near real-time basis, and that sounds awesome. But what about – is it always good, right? Is technology always great, or are there some unintended consequences, things that we need to think about with the future of technology? And we have the Internet of Things. I think there's a great future out there for – multi-parameter nanoscale sensors or even films. Imagine a water system that is able to, in the future, in a near real-time basis, identify and measure any type of parameter, temperature, any contaminant, PFAS, chrome, in the system anywhere on a near real-time basis. And we won't even get into AI and machine learning and how the system could fairly well run itself and predict challenges and take action. Are we thinking about that? Are we preparing for that? The recent challenges, though, is it Google Gemini? It's taken a bit of a beating, I think, in the paper. But what happens if we have a system in the future that is very well connected through AI machine learning-based technologies that simply runs itself and doesn't want to stop or take the right corrective measures that a normal qualified operator would take? How do we prepare for that, right? So I think we see that manifested today with the cybersecurity debate that's happening across America and even in Congress. A lot of the water utilities are trying to avoid cybersecurity problems. As we rush to do the digital transformation, what are the future risks of that? And are we beginning to see that? How do we prepare for that? What are our strategies? So the other piece to technology I would just mention, which connects us to the legal piece perhaps, is privacy. I can now perhaps with the, for example, smart meters and the Internet of Things, I can kind of see what's going on maybe inside your house. I can tell when you're flushing the toilet. I can tell maybe when you're taking a shower, when you turn on the gas stove, things like that. How do we think about that as society? And is there too much information? And how are the regulators responding to that in the world of water? But to the legal lens, we pick that up and think about Fourth and Fifth Amendment issues. You practice also in the world of energy. If I have, and there are cases on this that you've probably seen where the smart meters are able to detect who's using energy at 2, 3, and 4 in the morning. And does that provide probable cause to get a search warrant to go to somebody's house to determine that they're using grow lamps and they have contraband throughout their house? What are some of the legal challenges there, some of the unintended consequences? So the other key issues that I think we need to think about, and you've practiced in the West, what happens if our tradition of Western water rights goes away or is materially changed? How will that impact folks that use the lower Colorado River for water? How will that impact San Diego or other folks in California? We also think about, and this bridges to some of the ethical lenses, but what about the human right to water? I think you've heard a lot about that. We look at the Sustainable Development Goals by the United Nations. SDG 6 addresses water. We talk a lot about the human right to water. Many of the companies that you and I see are making commitments to environmental, social, and governance precepts, and the human right to water gets woven into that. But what does that mean? What is the nature and extent of that right? And what is the future or the futures of that statement? It seems pretty simple, but where will that take us? So the final piece to the ethical or the political that gets into the ethical would be the rights of nature. What if you and I were involved in a particular permitting scenario for a water treatment plant, and someone comes in and says, I'm the lawyer for the Mississippi River, and we're going to stop this process because the Mississippi River has decided it doesn't want water to be pulled out and put through your plant and treat it. That would seem odd to us, wouldn't it? So some of those things we need to think about as you look at the signals of change. You can find law review articles and other journals, papers that seem a bit obscure, odd to most people, but that's kind of where it starts. And I'll give you a good example of how that might work, but the paradigm of environmental justice has become very front and center for many people in the world of water. The new administration, the Biden administration, has issued probably two or three executive orders that connect to environmental justice or climate justice. And even within EPA, they have made it a point to promote environmental justice. But it didn't start 2-3 years ago. It began, well into the early 80s. And was focused on the intersection of civil rights and environmental protection, typically looking at landfills and incinerators. And over time, there have been bits and pieces in the literature and the papers on this notion of environmental justice. And here we are today, it's impacting what we do and what we talk about in the world of water. How does environmental justice as a paradigm impact how we permit water and wastewater facilities, how we engage in customer relations, public hearings, all those different things. We've talked about LIHEAP for water, right? That's an interesting, dimension. So you could have looked at that as a water utility 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago and said, you know, we need to start thinking about this in different ways. And you can monitor those signals of change and say, you know, we are ready. We are ahead of the game. And we can now, for example, permit our facility, locate it in a particular area because we've built the relationships with the neighborhood where it will not be an environmental justice concern. You've built into your strategies and your practices the ability to address environmental justice in a meaningful way without having to react to it and scratching your head saying, boy, we didn't see this coming. You know, it's not it's not going to be a black swan event, right? So, as that says. So, further into the political realm, you know, what happens if capitalism was to go away? You know, there are some foresight professionals. I had one on my podcast that really is looking at that. What happens? What does it mean if capitalism goes away? Are we seeing the signals of change on that? Let's bring that focused on the world of water. What would happen if you and I woke up and suddenly a future president said, I'm going to nationalize all the private water companies in America? Would that ever happen? Is it possible? Is it probable, plausible? That'll never happen is probably the response, right? So yeah, how do we prepare for that? How do we think about that, avoid that scenario? If we don't want that to happen, how do we begin to think about not allowing that to happen? Yeah. And if it does happen, how are we ready for that? So one of the final pieces, and we can talk about environmental all day long, obviously, what's the future of unregulated contaminants, right? I mean, everybody should be ready for that. We only regulate, 90 contaminants under the Safe Drinking Water Act, and we have, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of different compounds, that are in use across America. The question is, what's next, right? We spend a lot of time on PFAS, but what's next? But finally, I guess we talk about the ethical lens, and that's something that a lot of people have trouble thinking about. And I guess when you think about worldviews, and everybody has a worldview, the worldviews that we have and we bring to the table in the world of water, that drives our values, and our values drive our behavior. And so one of the questions that we often just don't even think about is why should we care about water? Why does it matter? Why should I have so much water to drink? Why should it be clean? And who decides? Those are things that I think people just take for granted. And what happens if there are different belief systems that change the way we think about water, the way we value water? Whether you're an atheist, whether you have a Judeo-Christian worldview, or maybe you have like in the Southwest, maybe an indigenous-focused worldview. How do those different worldviews begin to shape the way we think about water? And then how does that cascade into the laws, the regulations, the policies that we have? So there's much, much, much we could talk about when it comes to the intersection of foresight and water, but those are just some of the pieces that we could talk about, we could examine, look for the signals of change and really think about what do these things mean? What could they mean, these different futures, if I'm a legislator, if I'm a regulator, if I'm running a water utility, if I'm the head of a not-for-profit? How is the world changing through these different lenses, and how do I prepare for that? So that makes sense?
Matt, that makes absolute sense. You have given us a tremendous amount to chew on. And I'm so grateful you came on to, you know, on the 10th birthday of the podcast to give us a lot to chew on for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years in terms of how things are going to be going in the water sector. And so I am just so appreciative that you've been able to, I'm so appreciative that you've been my friend, my client at times. And so it's been great to know you. The podcast is the Water Foresight Podcast by Dr. Matthew Klein. And for Matt, so for those who want to find out more about you, find out more about your podcast and your work, where can they go to get that information?
Yeah, absolutely. The podcast, the Water Foresight Podcast, is you can find it. I think it's hosted on Buzzsprout, but it's also on iTunes or it's also on Google Podcasts, wherever you find your podcasts. You can also go to aqualaris.com and take a look there. And certainly you can reach out to me over email at matthew.klein@aqualaris.com. And Dave, I want to again congratulate you for 10 years of very thoughtful, dedicated, very meaningful insights into the world of water. You know, you maybe I'll go out on a limb here, but maybe you are the Walter Cronkite of water. You know, you have if been only. A mainstay. Not that you're 90 years old or anything like that. I you know, but you've done a great job of bringing many people to bear on the issues that matter in the world of water, and I think people appreciate that and respect that. And so, again, here's to four more decades of the Water Values Podcast. So, thank you, Dave.
Well, thanks very much. You know, and that's the way it is, right? I appreciate that, Matt. It's been a great ride, and I hope to keep it going a little bit, at least a little bit longer. Thank you again for your kind words, and we'll certainly talk to you again soon. So thanks so much, Matt, and have a great one. Thank you. Appreciate you spending time with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
You bet. Bye, Matt. Matt is absolutely phenomenal, and the water industry, frankly, needs more Matts who provide that strategic foresight and thinking. And thanks for coming on, Matt. You were terrific, just like way back when in episode one. Well, I'd love to know what you thought about the interview. Please check out the show notes page for information and links on this episode. Just Google the Water Values Podcast. Click the first link that comes up. That's our home on the web on Bluefield Research's website. Again, the Water Values LLC and Bluefield Research are not affiliates. We just have a joint marketing agreement. And as part of that, we get a home on the web at their site. Well, you can email me at david.mcgimsey@dentons.com, and you can sign up for the newsletter at that landing page I mentioned as well. Thank you again for tuning in, and I hope you make it a great day. Plus, I want to give a huge thank you again to our sponsors. Sponsors of the Water Values Podcast include 120 Water, 1898 & Co., Woodard & Curran, Intera, Xylem, the American Water Works Association, and Black & Veatch. This show would not be possible without those great companies and industry leaders. And again, thank you for listening over the past 10 years. It's been a true joy to be with you, for you to invite me into your home or your car or wherever you're listening. And I just am so appreciative of all the people that have reached out, have the friends I've made through this podcast. So thank you all. And please don't forget to subscribe to the Water Values Podcast. It would be greatly appreciated, and your support is truly appreciated. Well, in closing, please remember to keep the core message of the Water Values Podcast in mind as you go about your daily business. Water is our most valuable resource, so please join me by going out into the world and acting like it.
Listening to the Water Values Podcast. Thank you for spending some of your day with my dad and me.
Well, thank you for tuning in to the disclaimer. I'm a lawyer licensed in Indiana and Colorado, and nothing in this podcast should be taken as providing legal advice or as establishing an attorney-client relationship with you or with anyone else. Additionally, nothing in this podcast should be considered a solicitation for professional employment. I'm just a lawyer that finds water issues interesting and that believes greater public education is needed about water issues. And that includes enhancing my own education about water issues, because no one knows everything about water.